Good afternoon, everyone. This is the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development, and I am calling our meeting to order today, March 17th, 2015. We're going to be continuing our public hearing on Senate Bill 5525, the Oregon Business Development Department. So I'm going to go ahead and open that public hearing and invite Mr. Robbins back to the podium with whomever you'd like to have join you today.
Thank you, Chair Gomber, members of the committee, for having us back for a second day. And as we ended the day yesterday, you might recall that we were beginning to dive a little deeper into our unique divisions in the agency, specifically the Business Development Division. We're going to be going deeper into that division today. John Saris, who manages our business finance programs, is here. Ivo Trummer, who historically has done our global trade work and is now our legislative affairs director, will join us to present the global trade piece after John. And then we'll be switching gears to infrastructure finance and the Infrastructure Finance Authority with Assistant Director Lynn Chesler and walking through those programs. Finally, we'll wrap up the day with the Governor's Regional Solutions Center representative, Annette Liebe, who will be here along with Mike MacArthur and Bill Wyatt to round out the day. And if we are as good as we were yesterday on our timeline, at least, we will wrap up right at 4:30, hopefully. So with that, I will turn it over to Mr. Saris, who will continue on and walk you through the business finance piece of our work.
Thank you, Chair Gombert, members of the committee. For the record, my name is John Saris. I'm the Business Services Manager at Business Oregon. As Director Robbins indicated, today we'll be covering a number of resources administered by Business Oregon that provide technical assistance, capacity building, and also provide financing that bridges capital gaps experienced by small business seeking startup, growth, and expansion capital. The presentation today for each one of these programs and services will include a brief overview of each of the programs, a summary of the fiscal year activity for 2014, and then also a review of expenditure limitation and maybe some examples of some of the assistance that the programs have provided. I do believe that yesterday there were some questions specific to the Access to Capital program, how projects are vetted, the due diligence that the department conducts, and we hope to cover those during the Access to Capital portion of our discussion today. So, today, as I mentioned, we have really two categories of programs that we'll be overviewing. First is the technical assistance and capacity building resources that we administer. And then also we will be talking about some of the financial programs that we administer at the Business Development Department. Oregon is very fortunate to have some very mature programs. A lot of the finance programs that we administer have been around for 20 to 30 years and have an excellent history of job creation, private leverage, and success over the duration. These programs primarily do leverage private capital and again help with startup growth and expansion and retention. In the second part of today's presentation that I'm going to be doing, we'll talk about these seven finance programs. So to start with, covering the technical assistance and capacity building programs, we'll start with the Business Retention Services program. Business Retention Services is a program where the agency is directly involved with connecting small businesses to technical assistance resources. These resources come in the way of professional consultants that are identified to specifically help businesses address issues that are affecting either growth or retention issues that they're experiencing. The consultant pool is a pool that was selected through an RFP and through an application process and through a proposal process. We try to pair the business needs with the consultants that have the best experience to fit the needs of those businesses. The types of services that the consultants commonly help with include financial management, marketing, sales management, workforce, capital, access to capital, and regulatory issues. The Business Retention Services Program typically provides up to $15,000 per company, and that's done usually through three phases. The first phase of the assistance is usually some form of an assessment to identify what the need is of the company and to develop a plan that could be of assistance to them. The second phase then is the implementation phase, and then third, we look for an outcome-based report. So we're looking for what happened as a result of the assistance provided. So notably, in fiscal year 2014, there were 10 awards, and the sum of those awards was $135,000, and those awards impacted 97 jobs. About 70% of the companies assisted were outside of the Portland metro market, and as of February 1st of this year, the fund was fully committed. And that kind of leads us into the budget for this particular program. As you can see, that the budget for this program is relatively modest. There's an appropriation of $152,000 in lottery funding to support these services. And there's $90,000 that was available that came back through repayment of some of the awards. So the next two services that we'll talk about are services that are contracted with a third party to deliver technical assistance resources to small businesses statewide. Business Oregon contracts with the Oregon Small Business Development Center Network to deliver services through 19 centers statewide. And these centers are typically co-located in college campuses or on college campuses and at universities. The Oregon Small Business Development Center Network provides small business counseling and training services that include accounting, financial management, business plan, and strategic planning, again, access to capital, human resource management, and the list goes on. Services targeted traded sector support and high growth businesses. It is notable that 85% of their clients are and have fewer than five employees. So they really are supporting the micro enterprise and the entrepreneurial business community around the state. So as reported in the department's 2014 annual key performance measures, businesses receiving services from the Small Business Development Center Network had a higher survival rate than those not receiving services. Also during the past session in 2014, the department received legislative acceptance of a replacement performance measure, which we'll actually cover when we talk about the next service provider, who is the government contract assistance program. So Business Oregon does not only monitor the survival as a metric. Through our performance contracts with the Small Business Development Center, we also have other metrics. Those metrics include the number of new clients served, existing clients served, total clients, estimated jobs created and retained, federal funds leverage, business starts, and capital formation. So there is quite a bit of additional data that we do collect as a result of the state's investment. The budget for the Small Business Development Centers in the last biennial budget was $2.3 million. This investment by the state of Oregon did help leverage additional federal match that helps support the services that the Small Business Development Centers provide. Each year, through the SBA or Small Business Administration, roughly $1.2 million in match is awarded to the Small Business Development Center Network to help provide these services. Additionally, the Small Business Development Center Network is very aggressive in obtaining other types of funding through private and local investments around the state. And they leveraged about $650,000 in the last fiscal year. Total operating budget for this organization is roughly $3 million. With that, there's 19 centers statewide that support small business. There's about 150 staff delivering services, and about 5,700 firms a year receive this technical assistance. The next program.
I have a quick question.
Yes, Senator Hansel.
On the SBAs, where is it in this year's budget? Is it at the same level? Are you increasing it, decreasing it? Could I ask that question at this time?
Chair Gumberg, members of the committee. I believe that the appropriation from SBA is fairly flat at this point. If anything, it is starting to subside. The SBA's appropriation and match was increased specifically when states were having budget issues going through the recession. So during the recession period, the SBA match actually exceeded the state match nearly 2-1, and now it's slowly being leveraged back or ratcheted back. So we anticipate that that match will be roughly the same, $1.1, $1.2 million.
Please continue.
Thank you. So the next program is another technical assistance provider. This one is the Government Contract Assistance Program, or GCAP for short. GCAP is an entity that helps, their sole goal is to help small businesses obtain government contracts from federal, state, and local contracting agencies. They provide a suite of procurement-oriented technical assistance that is different from the services provided by the Small Business Development Center Network. These services include developing and submitting proposals, obtaining state and federal certifications. This does include the Office of Minority Women Emerging Small Business, SBA 7A or 8A certifications, and also the Veterans Service Disabled certification. They also assist with the registration of other federal programs. These do include registering with the SAM system and hub zones. They help with bid matching and selling to government and market assessments as well. So pretty comprehensive services. In fiscal year 2014, GCAP assisted 500 companies. Those companies, about 146 of them, received federal contracting awards that totaled $8.1 million. It is notable to point out that this is down from previous years. A large part of this was due to the sequestration that occurred during fiscal year 2014 by the federal government. It delayed a lot of public contracting opportunities and was really outside of the control of either the small businesses or GCAP. And we expect and have seen some increase in the number of federal awards that are occurring as a result. So again, this is another entity that was captured under key performance measure number 5, where business survivability was the key metric. And as you can see here, the survivability of these clients was higher than the statewide average. Beginning, and here's where we can talk briefly about the new performance metric, starting in this next fiscal year. The performance measure for GCAP will change. And this new measurement will consist of the amount and number of federal contracts awarded to Oregon businesses receiving assistance from and through GCAP. We'll track also the number of new clients receiving technical assistance during that period, and also the number of clients returning for technical assistance during the contract period. The budget for GCAP is $436,000 for the biennium. This is a required match for the Government Contract Assistance Program to receive about $1.5 million in federal funding from the Department of Defense and Defense Logistics Agency. The total biennial budget for GCAP is about $2 million, and they provide services to about 1,500 firms during the course of that period. And they do average about $20 million a year in federal contracts awarded to small businesses. Okay, and finally, the last technical assistance and capacity building program we'll discuss today is the Office of Minority Women and Emerging Small Business, or OMWESBE. I will throw that out there because it's a little quicker to say. So OMWESBE is a state's sole certification authority for the federal Disadvantaged Business Enterprise Certification Program and also three state programs. Those include the Minority-Owned Business Certification, the Women-Owned Business Certification, and the Emerging Small Business Certification. For the federal certification, or the DBE, or Disadvantaged Business Enterprise Certification, firms are primarily used by U.S. Department of Transportation and federal highway projects, where there are hard goals established in order for the state to benefit from federal dollars coming in. For state certifications, the firms are primarily used by state agencies, counties, municipalities, special contracting districts, for example, schools and hospitals who have aspirational targets established by each contracting entity or agency. In fiscal year 2014, there were approximately 3,200 firms that were certified and maintained their certification during the period. And you can see the breakout by program, the types of volume of activity related to applications, new applications, and application reviews through the course of the year. It is notable that on Friday, March 13th, the department was able to fully flip the switch on a new database and front-end software solution for the program. The software as a service resource that's called B2G Now has allowed WebSB to begin accepting e-applications. And as a result, the migration will allow the department to really look at the workflow and processes behind certification to look to gain efficiencies and improve processing times with certification. The elimination of dual data entry into two databases will be a nice relief for staff and should allow them to more swiftly process certifications.
Mr. Saris, 3,200 firms certified 2014. Talk to us a little bit about the trending there. I mean, you may know I spent the summer on a task force examining this issue. What we heard was that a number of firms declined to participate in certification, either because they didn't want to share that much detailed information, or they didn't perceive there were real benefits, or they simply sensed they could get the job, whether they were certified or not. Is that number going up, going down, holding about steady for you?
Chair Gomberg, members of the committee. During the recession, there was a fairly decent surge in certification because the small businesses were seeking any opportunity to obtain contracts, whether they were state or federal. As the recession has recovered, there has been a decline over 3 or 4 years, and now we're seeing more of a leveling. In fiscal year 14, certifications are up roughly about 100 over the previous fiscal year. And I do believe that staff have been working with a number of various stakeholders and other agencies, including Department of Administrative Services, Veterans, the Small Business Development Center Network, and others, to identify ways to increase the value of certification. With aspirational goals, agencies are set. They're seeking opportunities to level the playing field, but you know, working to increase the value of certification so that they will see an actual benefit will help drive an increased certification.
All right, thank you. Please go ahead.
So the budget for the Office of Minority Women and Emerging Small Business is roughly $1.6 million per biennia. It is notable that this particular program is assessment-based or other-funded. The assessments is applied to state agencies, 76 in total. Roughly 45% of that budget is picked up through a direct assessment to the Oregon Department of Transportation. The reason for that is that a bulk of the firms that are certified are doing road or highway, street, and bridge work, and so they've agreed to pick up a fairly substantial portion of the cost for the program. There are 75 state agencies covered in the assessment, and they are covering the other 55%. So with that, that completes the technical assistance and capacity building section, and we're prepared to move into the access to capital component.
Any questions? Well, let's keep rolling then. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, sir. So the next portion of our presentation is going to be specific to the access to capital programs that are administered by Business Oregon. And these programs specifically support small businesses in their efforts to obtain retention and growth and expansion capital from private and public lending sources. Primary purpose of these programs is to leverage, once again, private capital, and this is accomplished by mitigating lenders' risk, which then results in job creation retention as a result. As previously mentioned, some of the business finance programs have been nationally recognized, and specifically we'll walk through these in a few minutes, but the Oregon Business Development Fund, Credit Enhancement Fund, and the Oregon Industrial Revenue Development Bond Program. The reason why is because these programs are very effective in leveraging private financing. They're easy to use by our private lending partners, and the programs generate significant economic impacts.
Senator Johnson.
I should know the answer to this, Mr. Sarris, but I don't. How do you go about recruiting willing private sector partners to participate in your program?
Chair Gomberg, members of the committee, Senator Johnson. So, as you are aware, there are a large number of private lenders that are utilizing the program. We do quite a bit of outreach. Currently, we have 8 finance officers that are assigned to various regions around the state, and that's done fairly strategically because in Oregon, there are a number of key banking centers, Portland, Salem, Eugene, down in Medford, out in Pendleton, there seem to be hubs, Bend, Central Oregon.
And for I didn't hear you mention Scappoose, but that's
it's on the rise.
Yes. And so basically what we do is connect with those communities a lot like a business development officer does. We establish relationships within the banking community. Most of the staff that are working for the department are what we like to call recovering bankers. They've come out of private banking. They've got significant commercial lending experience, and with that comes relationships. As always, we can continue to grow relationships. This was going to be covered a little later on, but we can do it now. There's been quite a bit of merger and acquisition activity in the community banking world over the last year. As a result, we've actually had to connect with some of these new banks that have acquired other banks to ensure that we continue to manage these relationships. And these are relationship-driven programs. A lot of the referrals come directly from private lending partners. These are banks, credit unions, CDFIs, our economic development partners, et cetera. And so we need to maintain good, healthy working relationships with them to keep deal flow coming. So then finally, one of the biggest highlights for these programs is that they are self-sufficient. And what that means is that the income that is attributable to fee income, interest income, offsets administrative costs and losses. So they really aren't costing additional money to maintain. So today we're going to highlight 7 programs that really fall into 4 basic categories. The first category is direct loans. These are programs where Business Oregon makes loans directly to small businesses who then repay the principal and interest back to the department and to the fund where it can then be recycled into new investments. We'll then talk about 2 programs that provide insurance and guarantees. These are programs where Business Oregon insures either individual loans or portfolios of loans made by qualified regulated financial institutions. We'll then talk a little bit about 2 private activity bond programs. These are conduit bonds where the state of Oregon has no financial obligation to repay the debt and where the role of Business Oregon is to determine eligibility of the project and the borrower based on federal tax code. And then finally, we'll discuss the tax credit programs and specifically the Oregon New Market Tax Credit Program. As I mentioned, these are other funded programs. They're not receiving ongoing appropriations, a lottery or general fund to support the administration. So the first program that we'll talk about is the Oregon Business Development Fund. This is a program that was established in 1984, and it provides fixed-rate term loans to traded sector businesses, and it typically helps finance land, building, equipment, or perm working capital. To be eligible, a business must create jobs and must be a traded sector company. Loans typically with this program are between $50,000 and $1 million, and depending on the useful life of assets, securing the loan and the use of the proceeds may have terms up to 20 years. These loans are made in partnership with other lenders, and they typically do not exceed 40% of the eligible project costs and are subordinate to the private lender in the project. And that private lender is typically a bank or a credit union. In fiscal year 2014, the department was able to approve 15 loans totaling $5.6 million. These loans help leverage $30 million and create 203 jobs. These programs, and I'll mention this for each one of the programs, really do help small businesses in Oregon. This program actually supports some of the larger businesses, in part because it does support traded sector. But the average number of firms at the time, or employees at the time of application, was 17 for this program. 100% of the loans were made outside of the Portland metro market. And after this year, the pre-income loss over the last 10 years was 1.5%. After income, administrative costs, and losses, the fund did realize and recognize a profit of 2.7% over the same 10-year period. So it's being managed quite well. That income then is being reinvested into new projects around the state. So wanted to share with you a couple of projects that were recently funded. A couple of projects here. We have Drink Tanks. This is a company located in Bend. They manufacture stainless steel growlers. At the time that this particular company was funded, they were in its startup phase. The funding allowed them to buy new inventory, attend trade shows, and as a result have seen a number of orders and requests for their product. At this point, the company is looking for additional growth capital, and this is very common with a lot of the companies that we see and support through this particular program. Face Rock Creamery was another early stage company where Business Oregon partnered with Craft 3 in the Port of Bandon. The financing provided financed equipment and a new building. And this was a company that filled a void from the Bandon Cheese Factory leaving and is now a local supplier, exporter of cheese, and a tourist attraction there in the city of Bandon. And then finally, we have Oakshire Brewing out of Eugene. This investment, the state partnered with Summit Bank, who provided financing to help purchase real estate and equipment. The expansion helped the brewery increase capacity to 13,000 barrels annually, and as a result is projected to add 19 new jobs. Our second direct loan program that we'll talk about today is the Entrepreneurial Development Loan Fund, and the short for this is EDLF, because that's a mouthful too. And this particular program provides fixed rate financing for micro enterprise and for new businesses starting up in Oregon. Most of the program participants don't qualify for traditional lending because of the high risk nature and the costs associated with administering a startup loan program. Recent legislative enhancements to the program allowed Business Oregon to increase loan limits to $75,000 for the first time people apply to the program, and increase the terms to 10 years, allowing us to finance some of these loans over a longer period of time. In order to qualify for an EDLF loan, the applicants must work with the Small Business Development Center Network or a counselor like them. There are a number throughout the state that includes SCORE, Office of, or the Mercy Corps, Oregon Association of Minority Entrepreneurs. And this is to ensure that their business plan and the investment has been vetted by a counselor. Unlike OBDF, or the Business Development Fund, this particular program is not limited to traded sector. It does also support retail and service. Probably about 60% of the projects that we see are related to retail and service. It also will support ag production as well. So in fiscal year 2014, the department was able to approve 12 loans, totaling about $385,000. Average of the loan was about $32,000 per customer. And this helped leverage about $375,000 in private funding. These loans will help retain 35 jobs and create 29 new jobs. And the total project cost was about $63,000. So you can see these are relatively small loans. And this truly is what we would call a micro enterprise program, with the average employment at the time of application being two. So very small businesses that are receiving services. Over the last 10 years, there's been about $2.2 million in loans, about $400,000 in losses, and the fund is actually moving towards a break-even point. Once a portfolio reaches about $2 million, there should be sufficient income to support administrative costs and losses with the program. So a couple of examples. Chemtone Music and Repair was a Salem-based company. Excuse me. This is a community music store that supports the needs of the local school district, providing musical instruments to students on a rental or purchase agreement. The $20,000 loan provided by the department enabled the company to purchase 100 instruments, serving more students here in the local community. The other example is M&D Ventures. This was an established concern as well. $50,000 loan was made to them. The company's located in Oakland. Helped the company buy new equipment. It was a blower and dust collection system. This allowed the secondary wood product manufacturer that makes large wooden spools to take their waste product and turn it into a revenue stream for the company. All right. A lot of talking there. Okay, so those are the two direct loan programs that we administer. Next, we're going to talk about two of the portfolio and or insurance programs that we administer. The typical client for this is going to be a bank or a credit union. Banks and credit unions will identify these credits and enroll them into the state's program. The first program is the Capital Access Program. And this is a program that provides, the CAP program has an enrollment fee that's paid by the borrower and lender. That fee is then deposited into a state-controlled loss reserve account with the financial institution. And then the CAP program itself provides a match to the fee that the borrower and the lender pay. That fee and both fees remain in that loss reserve account. And in the event that there is a default, the bank goes through liquidation. If there is a balance owing, they can then look to this loss reserve account to be made whole on that particular transaction. This is a program that's strategically used and primarily used by community banks. And when most successfully used, the program helps support specific industries and types of loans. For example, loans under $50,000, loans made for startups, loans made to businesses with 3 years of operating history, et cetera. For fiscal year 2014, the average enrolled loan was about $90,000, and the average FTE per borrower at time of application was 5. So again, servicing very small businesses in our state. This is a program that, too, is available to most industry types, both traded sector, retail, service, and agriculture. So in 2014, the department was able to enroll 24 loans, providing over $40,000 in matches to the lender and borrower fees. This investment helped leverage $2.2 million in private funding and is protected. Yeah. Excuse me.
Get so excited talking about finance, right?
Thank you. Okay, and it's projected to create 52 jobs and retain 69 jobs. And roughly two-thirds of those loans were made outside of the Portland metro market. Okay, over 10 years, more than $50 million in loans have been enrolled, and the loss reserve account has helped lenders recover about $2.1 million in losses. The expenditure limitation that you see here helps provide the matches and also covers the distributions made to cover the lender's losses. Okay. The next program, the Credit Enhancement Fund, is the second program administered by the department that actually insures loans on a loan-by-loan basis rather than a portfolio basis. The enrollment fees vary based on the term of the insurance and can provide insurance on both term loans and operating lines of credit. The amount of those guarantees will either be a cap at $2 million or $1.5 million, depending on the credit facility. On average, the number of employees per borrower at the time of application here is 14. In 2014, the department was able to approve 62 loans, insuring about $17.2 million in exposure. This helped leverage about $33.7 million in private financing. The average enrolled loan was about $550,000, and those loans are projected to create or retain 316 jobs. More than three-quarters of those loans were enrolled outside of the Portland metro market. Over 10 years, the enrolled loans total over $155 million, and the department's paid $1.6 million in claims. That's roughly about a 1% loss rate. For the same period, the fee income was about $4.6 million, and administrative costs were $3.2 million. So the net cost was about $200,000. One of the things that is notable is that the interest income, because the reserve for this particular program sits on deposit, is down significantly as a result of deposit rates being very low, probably earning somewhere around 0.25% on our deposits right now. As that comes up, we should see the program get back to a break even. We talked a little bit about this, so I'll be able to go more quickly through it. A number of banks and credit unions use this program. This year, we've added five new lenders to the program. Lenders will use this particular program to pursue fringe credits. This allows them to make loans to businesses that they may not have otherwise been able to make. One particular lender that uses the program quite a bit is Columbia Bank. They were actually acknowledged nationally by the U.S. Department of Treasury as one of the top 10 users of state programs nationwide. So the next two programs that we're going to talk about are private activity bonds. And then we'll stick on this slide for just a minute or two, because I'm going to give you an overview of how these programs work, and then we'll move fairly quickly through the nuances of the two particular programs. So these two programs, it's the industrial development bonds and Aggie bonds, are typically called conduit bonds. And their purpose is to effectively lower the cost of capital for eligible projects. The cost of capital is reduced using these bonds because the program exempts the lender from federal income taxes that are typically paid on the interest income attributable to the repayment of the loan or the bond. That savings is then passed from the lender to the borrower, typically reducing the cost of financing by 20 to 25%. It's important, again, to note that these bonds do not represent an obligation to the state, because we are a conduit issuer. These programs merely determine the eligibility of the projects, and the state serves as a pass-through for federal private activity bond allocation. In the event of a default of one of these bonds, the lender or the bondholder is responsible for all collection-related activities and bears 100% of the risk of the investment. So, what do industrial development bonds do? They help Oregon manufacturers and processors obtain low-cost, long-term financing for the acquisition of land, building, and equipment. There are some exceptions that make the bonds available to companies that aren't directly engaged with manufacturing, and these exceptions are primarily used for solid waste disposal projects, waste energy projects, and recycling facilities and docks. For a number of reasons, private activity bond volume is down nationwide. Some of those factors include very low cost of funds, interest rates are down. A lot of the lenders have a very limited appetite for tax-exempt bonds in their investment portfolios. And over the last 5 years, most of the bonds have been purchased not by community banks, but by national banks and lending partners. When community banks are issuing these bonds, we see a lot more deal flow because they're identifying the projects in our community. One other factor impacting this particular program is that it is dependent upon the federal Internal Revenue Service Code. And as a result of this program not being updated in the IRC for over 20 years, some of the definitions and parameters are becoming outdated. So in fiscal year 2014, the department issued two bonds leveraging about $14 million in private capital. These are projected to create 91 jobs. The average number of employees per borrower is 125. And just so you are aware, this is somewhat skewed because we had one borrower that had about 230 employees at the time. Interesting to note, that same borrower is a company in White City that initially funded their initial operation with a $10 million IDB that helped create those jobs. So this is their second expansion using this particular program. The other borrower had roughly about 35 or 40 employees, and that's more typical of the type of small business that we see. The next private activity bond program is our Aggie Bond program. This is a program that helps beginning expanding farmers obtain capital, much like the Industrial Revenue Development bonds. To qualify, the borrower must qualify as a beginning farmer, as defined by the Internal Revenue Code, and it can be used to finance depreciable property, new and used equipment, and farmland. Like the Industrial Development bonds, this is not an obligation of the state, and the lender bears all the risks associated with servicing the loan. This was a new program that was recently established and launched in March of 2014.
Question? Senator Hansel.
I realize it was about a year old. Have you had folks apply for these, any Aggie bonds out?
Chair Gomberg, Senator Hansel, members of the committee. We actually have received probably 40 or 50 calls from people interested in the program. The key here is that the state isn't able to approve loans. And so what we've been doing is connecting the people interested with the program to various resources to get to a lender that may have an interest to qualify that particular project as an Aggie bond. As a result, no. But programs like this do take some time. Washington recently established a program, and it was about 2 years prior to their issuance of their first Aggie bond. There is some legislation that is being considered during this particular session that would allow Northwest Farm Credit Services to be an issuer of the bonds. They are the sole issuer of bonds in Washington, and as a result of them having a footprint here, we expect, if they are eligible, that we should see some volume in this particular program.
And Mr. Sarris, I believe I heard you say that qualifying farms need to be new farmers based on federal definitions. What are federal definitions of a new farmer?
Chair Gomberg, members of the committee, that's a good bond council question. Off the top of my head, typically it can't be somebody that has owned land or purchased land in the last 10 years and needs to be fairly new to farming. The other belief, and I'm speculating here a bit, but is that they intend to use the farm income as a primary source of income. So there's some qualifying criteria there.
All right, that'll work for me. Thank you. Yes, Senator.
It might be someone that hasn't gone broke before.
Fair enough.
Okay, the final program that we'll talk about today is the Oregon New Market Tax Credit Program. This is a program that began accepting allocation applications in July of 2012 and is a companion program to the Federal New Market Tax Credit Program. The Oregon program, much like the federal program, helps finance projects with social, community, and economic benefit in low-income census tracts. Each project is eligible to receive an allocation of the lesser of the total project costs, or $8 million. The project is then awarded 39% of the project allocation in Oregon income tax credits, up to a maximum of $3.12 million per project. Those credits are then claimed by the investor over a seven-year period, and then the investor at the end or throughout the investment provides a benefit, either reducing the borrowing costs or by providing some form of debt forgiveness at the end of the investment. So in 2012, there was about $200 million in project allocation available. That would be a tax, about $78 million in tax credits over a seven-year period. Through fiscal year 2014, there were 21 projects approved, committing $93 million in allocation. As of today, roughly $198 million in of allocation has been awarded, and there are about $72 million in pending projects. We anticipate that the program will be fully subscribed by about July 2015. To date, about half of the investments have been made outside the Portland metro market, and it's worthwhile to note that one of the metrics captured with this program is the amount of federal new market tax credits that were leveraged in conjunction with the Oregon new market tax credits. To date, about $130 million of Oregon allocation has leveraged about $150 million of federal tax allocation.
So with that, I choked my way through my slides.
Mr. Saris has been going strong for 45 minutes. Any questions before we let him off the hook? All right. Well, thank you so very much for packing a two-hour presentation into those 45 minutes. Well done.
So, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, as we move on to our next presenter, Ivo Trummer, who will walk us through the global trade piece of our work, I just want to remind you of a bit of the path that we're on, where Samantha Julian, late in the afternoon yesterday, went into the business retention and expansion recruitment work. John Saris walked us through the business finance piece of that work. Ivo Trummer will now walk us through the global trade component of this work. All still falls under the Grow Our Own framework, under that business development leg. So we're systematically walking through the strategic framework now, piece by piece. And the global trade piece represents a really important, albeit a relatively small portion of the agency's activities. Its impact is pretty outsized in terms of its return on investment, a key theme we talked about yesterday. So with that, I'll yield the microphone to Ivo Trummer for our global trade piece.
Welcome, Mr. Trummer.
Thank you, and good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ivo Trummer. I'm the Legislative Affairs Manager for the Oregon Business Development Department, but until just a few months ago, I managed the export promotion efforts for the department for the last 4 years, so this is why I will talk about it. Global trade, and the good news is, I'll say this right away, it won't take 45 minutes. So the good news for me, I guess. Before I start, I want to highlight a couple of numbers I'd like you to kind of keep in mind as we're walking through the presentation. One is a number you'll hear time and time again. About 95% of the world's consumers live outside the United States. A huge part of that, right, sort of to the continuing over the ocean on the Pacific Rim from us, but 95% of the world's consumers live outside the United States, and about 3% of U.S. companies actually export outside the and access international markets. So there's a huge potential for U.S. companies, and especially Oregon companies, to participate in the global trade. The second number I want you to remember or keep in mind is that as of 2014, it's estimated that 92,000 Oregon jobs are directly related to exporting efforts by Oregon companies. And the last number I'd like to highlight is in 2014, it was really a banner year for Oregon exports. We broke $20 billion for the first time, almost went to $21 billion. It's $20.9 billion of Oregon goods that were exported from Oregon to the world. I want to tell you the five ranking, the five top destinations: China, Canada, Malaysia, Japan, and Korea. It's all, if you will, with the exception of Canada, the largest trading partner for the U.S. in general, but the second largest for Oregon. It's all the Asian market for Oregon.
Mr. Trummer, excuse me for interrupting. We've been talking a lot about micro businesses, and most micro businesses export as consistently as the larger ones do. How do we track it when FedEx or a Priority Mail takes a package outside the country and we're exporting on behalf of our smallest enterprises?
Thank you, Chair Gornberg. That's a great question. That is actually an easier way for us to track than, let's say, service exports. The moment a good leaves the country, somebody has to fill out a customs form, and that custom form is tabulated and calculated by the U.S. Census Bureau, which then shares the numbers on a state-by-state basis with service providers such as us, if you will. So in that sense, we actually have a pretty good idea where it leaves. We can point to the port of, at least by dollar volume, where it leaves from the U.S., in what the commodity is, if you will.
Well, that's an excellent answer. 60% of my out-of-country customers ask me to check the box that says gift. We don't do that, but they always ask.
Thank you, Jack. And then there's always the question about the quality of the form that gets filled out.
My point exactly. Please proceed.
So that might be a larger number if you take all the gifts. I will focus really my presentation here on two grant programs that we have: the Oregon Trade Promotion Program, or OTPP, and then STEP, the State Trade Export Promotion Program, funded by the USSBA in large parts. I want to briefly highlight also the technical assistance, if you will, the work really or the service provided by our global trade specialists. We have four in the Portland office. Anything of the question of how do you register register a lip balm made out of made in Oregon in China? What's the FDA equivalent approval process in China? Do you do it through a distributor? What a distributor pays for you, or do you do it through a legal counsel in Shanghai? Well, you pay for it, but what are the implications for you? So those kind of questions we get every day, and we have folks we can either point to or handle it in-house. Other questions that we'll deal with on a regular basis is, how do you connect a Oregon company with a warehouse distribution center, or help them acquire a warehouse distribution center in Korea, for example, to service the Pacific market? General shipping and logistics questions will be a general technical assistance we provide, or just plain helping find Japanese buyers for Oregon products in Japan. We do that every day. I'll focus my presentation now on the two export promotion grants. I'll start with the state-funded one. The Oregon Trade Promotion Program has been around since the early 2000s. It's grants to small and medium-sized Oregon businesses. They have to be headquartered in Oregon. They have to have the majority of the employees in Oregon. They have to be traded sector. We will cover 50% of the cost up to $5,000. I'll talk about the process and how we get there in a later slide. And we will cover 50% of eligible costs, I should say. So what we consider eligible is the booth costs to attend an international trade show, the shipping costs to get your products over there to Shanghai or Hong Kong, if you will, for a wine show. We never cover airfare. I want to just make that clear. And we reimburse a company only after they actually went to a trade show, upfronted all their costs out of their own pocket, come back and give us a report and invoices and receipts and such, so that we have a paper trail for their costs and then calculate 50% or 5,000, whichever is less, I guess is the correct one. The second one I want to focus on is the, before I go there, I also want to talk about trade shows themselves. Usually we help companies go to trade shows. They either bring us a trade show that they want to attend in a given market, or, and we do this quite a bit, we will identify for a particular cluster, let's say outdoor or aviation or security, we will identify a trade show in a specific market where we think there's great potential for Oregon, and then gather or recruit a number of Oregon companies to go and attend together, purchase an Oregon booth and so forth, and do it that way. I keep going the wrong way. I'll switch over to the STEP grant program, the State Trade Export Promotion. Really functions identical to the OTPP, the one I just described. Again, we reimburse companies after the fact up to 50% or 5,000, whichever is less. There are two big differences. One, this is primarily federally funded through the USSBA. It's a competitive grant process that we apply for every year. We're currently in year three. I'm proud to say we were one of only 22 states that got actually funding in year three. Year four for STEP, or the SBA funding, has been announced, but no details yet. It's not clear when we can actually apply for it or what the funding limit will be. It's as Congress approves a budget, we'll learn these things. The other big difference, and just because it's noted here, I'll touch on this. This particular program, it's an interesting issue. It requires companies to be profitable. That is an issue for startups. Even many years, as companies receive funding to grow rather than to actually be profitable, this particular program could not be used for them. On both programs, we track performance heavily by company, if you will. I mentioned that companies get reimbursed after they return from a show. I'll maybe touch on process a little bit. Companies apply in year one of STEP. A number of years ago, we actually tallied the referring partners, about 40, 45 organizations and individuals statewide, local economic development organizations, business development officers, chamber. The Chamber of Eugene was very active for many years in helping us, in referring companies to us. Companies apply online. They have to show a certain eligibility criteria, such as they have to be headquartered in Oregon, they have to be small and medium-sized, they have to have the majority of their employees in Oregon. They do an application, they get approved. We fill out a contract with them long before they go on a show, and get federal approval if they're using the federal program here. They come back after the show and have to report to us the results of a show. What is their immediate sales? What are the expected sales over a certain period of time? How many sales leads did they get through the show appearance? potential distributors, job creation, although I will say this is, we don't verify the job creation. These are anecdotal. We ask them what is the job creation associated with that, but we don't include that in our KPM tally, if you will. And then we follow up with each company after 6 months and 12 months one more time with the same set of questions, an online process, and then tally that all up and roll it into our export KPM 4 and then or report to the federal government on the STEP program. A bit about funding OTPP. All of it comes really through the industry competitiveness fund. OTPP about $400,000 in the current biennium, and then the state trade export promotion, the federal program, it had $100,000 also from ICF for the state match. There was a 3-to-1 or 1-to-3 match required, and then $300,000 in federal funds. I say this just. They do have a different fiscal year than we than our fiscal year, so the budgeting it gets a little strange there. Their year three runs through the end of September, whereas our fiscal year, as you know, ends with June 30th. In 15-17, we certainly hope that funding will again be available through the ICF fund. And for STEP year four, it is unclear yet when that might be available. As soon as it will be and we know how to apply for it, we will certainly come back to you or to the e-board to ask for permission to apply. Last, I'll close just with three highlights here to give you a sense of the type of company that we might help. Metolius Mountain Products, they manufacture climbing gear out of Central Oregon. We helped them a number of years ago together with a group of Oregon outdoor manufacturers to go to an outdoor show in Germany by the very creative name of Outdoor. It was a great success. They've been reporting for years now, actually great success in the German and Central European market from that show. Plastifab in Tualatin, they do composites, both in the wastewater and water industry, but also in construction, for construction companies. We helped them twice now to go to the Middle East, and they, although haven't reported any immediate sales from that, expecting quite a bit of business there over the next following years, and they continue to go back. And then the last one, Riverhawk, is a boat manufacturer out of White City. We helped them go to what is, I think I mentioned it, Oregon's second largest or the U.S.'s largest foreign export partner to Canada, a boat show in Vancouver, B.C., and they have been very successful, and I believe they go back every year at this point. Maybe just a little side note, how long it takes actually for an export sale. I would think for any sale to materialize. We helped a company a couple of years ago to go to a show in India. It was a security show. They found a buyer. It was actually out of the Middle East. It took 18 months before they sold about $2.5-3 million worth of equipment, but it took 18 months. It was interesting in so much it was funded out of the STEP program. I could never report the export sale because the reporting deadline was cut off. So it just kind of lingered out there. We were happy to report it to this committee, though. With that, I'll close. I did this under 15 minutes.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Trummer? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. With that, Chair Gomberg and members of the committee, I'm inviting up Assistant Director Lynn Schessler, who leads our Infrastructure Finance Authority within the agency. And if you recall from yesterday, within the Grow Our Own framework, there's two basic premises. One is to help the companies compete, Oregon companies compete, and one is to help the communities themselves be competitive. And infrastructure is the biggest piece of that picture that we have at the agency and the work that the Infrastructure Finance Authority does. So with that, Lynn Schessler with the Infrastructure Finance Authority.
Thank you. Welcome, Mr. Schessler.
Thank you, Co-Chairs Gomberg and Johnson and members of the committee. For the record, I am Lynn Schessler, Assistant Director for the Infrastructure Finance Division. This illustration before you sort of exemplifies the heart of the Infrastructure Finance Authority and our division. This may be a project that is familiar to Senator Hansel. This is a water tank and new well that we financed in the city of Stanfield.
I like it.
And in the fine print there, you can see Go Tigers.
Yep.
And just as an aside, this photo was taken by the project engineer, not from the project engineer's company plane, but from the company's unmanned aerial vehicle or drone. Drones for good, not evil. Today we're going to be talking about the Infrastructure Finance Division. I make that notation because...
And, Mr. Chair, so high you can see the curvature of the earth. I just point that out.
And I'm not going to reflect whether they had a permit to take this photo or not.
I'm sure they did.
I'm sure they did as well. So today I'm going to talk about the Infrastructure Finance Division, and I make the distinction between the division versus the Infrastructure Finance Authority that was legislatively created in 2009. The division is much broader than the Infrastructure Finance Authority. The programs that are statutorily described in the Infrastructure Finance Authority are basically the municipal borrower programs that we have. And when we started, that is what we had. But through the course of time, the division has been expanded. Now we have the Seismic Rehabilitation Grant Program, which addresses school and emergency service building needs. And Senator Johnson and I will get to a coherent plan for seismic in just a minute. It also includes the brownfield remediation loans and grants that, are public and privately owned lands, as well as industrial lands. The private and public ownership is there as well. And lastly, we act as the fiduciary agent for the Regional Solutions Projects funding. As reflected on the slide, our mission is not only community development, as was the focus of it in the past, but now we are currently heavily involved with economic development as well. The key work areas for the division are reflected in the Grow Our Own document that Director Robbins reflected and commented on yesterday. Industrial land availability and preparedness is a focus, job creation projects, as well as community health and safety infrastructure. Like the business program diagram you saw yesterday, we have field people in the staff as well. We call our folks the regional coordinators, and our geographic areas of responsibility align with the regional solutions areas of the state, which also coincidentally are the economic development districts of the state. We noted to you, but I'll remind you, that in our budget we have a request for one additional regional coordinator to match a person for each one of the regional solutions areas and economic development districts. And I'll remind you before you panic that that is an other funded, not lottery funded position. The division as a whole has 10 different programs, and they're listed on this slide and the next one. And during the course of the next few minutes, I'll talk about each one of those. This page are all state-funded programs. We'll talk about the proposed Infrastructure Opportunity Fund, the Regional Infrastructure Fund, the Seismic Rehabilitation, Special Public Works, and Water Wastewater programs. When we include the seismic grants that we've just awarded, 90% of our projects are in the rural parts of the state, and 94% of the funding goes to rural parts of the state. Historically, we've done about $50 to $80 million in loan commitments or grant commitments annually. With the seismic program, now we're exceeding $100 million annually. Actually, the seismic program has lowered our concentration in rural parts of the state. Before the seismic program was initiated, we had 93% of our projects in the rural parts of the state, with 98% of the funding in those areas. These are the additional programs of the department. The Community Development Block Grant and the Safe Drinking Water Program are federal funds that we receive. Brownfields includes both state and federal funds. The ports programs are state funded, as well as the industrial lands. The Infrastructure Opportunity Fund is a proposal we have before the legislature, and it's embodied in House Bill 2435. $10 million in the budget is requested, and it's that but-for last-mile infrastructure funding that, should a community have a business opportunity but lacks the infrastructure for that project, this is the fund, but for it not providing resources, this project and these jobs in that community would not happen. It's rural-directed, not urban-directed. And it's not only for local government that often has the problem with creating infrastructure, but it also can go to private businesses or nonprofits or even institutional entities. The loans are both a loan or they can be forgiven. The statutory proposal has a $2.5 million loan limit per project. The importance of this program is that that $2.5 million figure is bigger than anything else we have. We have a statutory limitation for the Special Public Works Program of $1 million. It's unusual for the Strategic Reserve Fund to fund a project at the $1 million level. This is the large funding resource that really will help us carry out some initiatives. The one that you probably have heard repeatedly from Representative Bentz is the Gentura Road in Harney and Malheur counties. That's a 7-mile road to the Druzy mine. I believe there's a proposal to develop for that company to make a $100 million investment with lots of jobs. That's a $5 to $7 million project, though, that the county doesn't have the money for. This will be a piece of it. The Strategic Reserve could be a piece of it. The Special Public Works Program could be a piece of it. Immediate Opportunity Fund, much as the school project that Senator Johnson worked on, with pieces from everybody, we can finally get there. And I think that's what this program provides the opportunity for.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator.
I'd just like to take a minute to amplify that, because the projects now are getting to be so big that it is not just come to the state and ask for the money and we fix it. We need mosaics of funding that come from a variety of different sources. And I happen to be a major advocate for that Gentura Road. Even though it's well away from my district, the company will participate in that. And when you finally stack all of the various sources of funds, you can deliver on some of these big projects that otherwise would be unobtainable from single sources.
Right. And our response for that particular project, when it was identified last fall, our Special Public Works Program did provide a grant to the county to do the preliminary engineering to get started, but we don't have the money to actually do the road improvements themselves.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Please.
So is the preliminary design work underway right now?
Correct. We provided $42,000 and it's underway at present.
Oh, that's great. I didn't know that. That road, colleagues, Representative Reed was with me when we went out there. It has potholes in it deep enough to bury a dog in. That is a dangerous road.
Dental bills to prove it, don't we?
Okay. All right. Well, with that graphic image in firmly in mind, let's move right along.
Swallowing hard, moving on. Okay. This particular slide simply reflects that within the budget, there's $10.2 million. The $2.2 million is the cost of issuance for the bonds that are included in the budget. The next program is the Regional Infrastructure Fund. This is the account where the Regional Solutions lottery bond proceeds are deposited for us to then disperse to the various projects around the state. We carry out the contracts, we do the disbursements, but in all fairness, let me introduce Annette Leiba from the Governor's Office, who's the Regional Solutions Program Director, and she'll talk to you a little bit about the Regional Solutions projects.
Welcome, Ms. Leiba.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Co-Chair Skomberg, Co-Chair Johnson, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Annette Leiba, and I serve as the Regional Solutions Director in the Governor's Office. Thank you for the opportunity to present to you today. I'm honored to be joined by Mike MacArthur, Executive Director of the Association of Oregon Counties, and Bill Wyatt, Executive Director for the Port of Portland. We're here today to ask for your support of the proposed budget for the Regional Solutions Priorities and Program. I've organized my presentation into three sections. The first is to give you a general overview of the Regional Solutions Program. The second is to share with you how Regional Solutions Priorities were funded during the current biennium. And then finally, I'll wrap up with a description of what was in the Governor's recommended budget for Regional Priorities. The Regional Solutions Program is a priority for Governor Brown. In February 2014, the legislature expressed its support for the program by adopting it into statute. I want to acknowledge and thank Senator Johnson for being a key supporter of the legislation. The Regional Solutions approach also directly supports the Grow Our Own mission of Business Oregon. Regional Solutions works locally to identify priorities, solve problems, and align state resources with private, philanthropic, and other public resources to address the unique economic and community development needs.
Excuse
for
me,
regions
please,
around
I'm
Oregon.
I'm going to have you inch back.
Should
just
I back
a
up?
Hair from
oh,
the microphone.
Oh, much better for me, too. Okay, thank you. I'm glad you can hear. The regions, as Mr. Schessler mentioned, the regions have been strategically aligned with the 11 economic development districts around the state. For each region, advisory committees representing private, philanthropic, and public sectors have been established. The role of the advisory committees, there's two roles. First, they establish priorities for the region, and then second, they help leverage resources into projects that address those priorities. Over 100 elected officials, business representatives, foundation staff, and citizens are participating as members of Regional Solutions Advisory Committees. To the extent possible, five core state agencies have co-located their staff in six Regional Solutions Centers around the state. The five core state agencies are the Departments of Transportation, Land Conservation and Development, Environmental Quality, Housing and Community Services, and Business Oregon. To address regional priorities and solve problems involving natural resource issues, the legislature directed natural resource agencies to participate in regional solutions teams when they adopted House Bill 4015 in February. Coordination for the teams has been provided by the governor's office. Regional solutions teams work together to integrate permitting requirements, remove barriers to business retention and expansion, and quickly respond to issues. Some specific examples include streamlining and funding permitting for dredging at small ports along Oregon's coast, increasing shovel-ready.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I just feel compelled to add this because at this point, when you talked about streamlining permitting, up to this point where money was introduced into regional solutions, the regional solution folks had to go out and find their own money. And it came together from a variety of sources. Unfortunately, an urban mythology has grown up in this building that Regional Solutions provides a methodology around all required state and federal permitting. Anything could be farther from the truth. Anything could be farther from the truth. And when you talked about streamlining permitting, it didn't abrogate the need to get core and local permits from state regulatory agencies and environmental protection agencies. It rather developed a protocol with the core so that we could do more coherent permitting, but the permitting was still in place. And I don't want anybody listening to this to think that somehow this is an abrogation of the requirement to seek and achieve local permitting and federal permitting.
Chair Gomberg, Senator Johnson, you're absolutely correct. There's nothing in the alignment work or the streamlining work that has changed any of the regulatory standards applicable to any of the projects that we've worked on.
Thank you.
And other examples include improving rail safety along Highway 30 through Columbia County, streamlining again state and federal wetland permitting, developing programmatic approaches for larger geographic areas rather than looking at them on a site-by-site basis, working to improve forest health and increase access to timber resources, and supporting the development of workforce housing. In the 2013-15 biennium, the governor's budget requested $2 million for each region to support their highest priority. Six of the regions had their highest priority directly funded by the legislature. Those priorities were water for agriculture in southern Oregon, improving forest health and access to timber resources in eastern and northeastern Oregon, OSU Cascades campus in central Oregon, public access to Willamette Falls in the metro region, and support for entrepreneurship and innovation in the South Valley Mid-Coast region. This is where I move forward. Oh. So to support the priorities in the remaining five regions, the legislature established the Regional Infrastructure Fund in 2013 and allocated $9 million of lottery bond revenue to priority projects for those regions in 2014. The 2014 projects are depicted here. There are five capital construction projects. Those are a rail siding project in Dallas. This is a former Weyerhaeuser site where there's existing rail infrastructure that needs to be upgraded in order to make it an attractive site for a potential employer. Upgrades to the Carlton water system, rail safety improvements in Rainier, dredge purchase and operations for the South Coast ports, and Innovation and Learning Center, which is an opportunity to support distance learning between Klamath and Lake counties through the Klamath Community College. The next project that's listed is a $2 million revolving loan fund for workforce housing in the Columbia Gorge region, $1.5 million to reduce barriers to business retention and expansion by replacing old wood stoves in Klamath and Lake counties, and $200,000 for a job creation and job training program through the Marion Polk Food Share project. Last year, we asked each of the 11 Regional Solutions Advisory Committees to identify preliminary priority projects where the state could contribute $2 million in catalytic investments to leverage additional investments. Based on those preliminary projects, we request that the Regional Infrastructure Fund be capitalized with $7 million in lottery revenue and $14 million in lottery bond revenue. The lottery fund request supports regional priorities that do not involve capital construction, such as promoting entrepreneurship, addressing gaps in workforce training priorities, supporting local capacity to develop and manage projects, and support one-time program startup costs. I will note that there's an additional $1 million of lottery revenue for innovation initiatives to support the entrepreneurship priority in the South Valley Midcoast. The lottery bond request supports regional priorities related to capital construction, such as infrastructure, levy accreditation, and industrial lands readiness. In addition to funding the regional solutions priorities, there are two positions in the budget that were approved during the last biennium as limited duration positions, and we're asking for them as permanent positions in the upcoming budget. So that concludes my remarks. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Okay, we've got about 10 minutes left. Where
Great.
Would you like to take us next?
I'm going
to
hand it over to Mike MacArthur.
Who will hand it over to Bill White.
All right. Great.
Well,
thank you.
Nicely done.
Chair Gomberg, Senator Johnson, members of the committee, thank you very much. I'm Bill Wyatt, Executive Director of the Port of Portland. And as you know, there are 11 of these advisory teams around the country. They're interdisciplinary, involving the Department of Transportation, Land Conservation Development, Business Oregon, the Oregon Environmental Environmental Quality Department, and the Department of Housing and Community Services. And just happens that I'm chair of the Metropolitan Area Advisory Committee. And just to give you a sense about who serves on that, which I think is kind of reflected in each of the advisory committees, City Commissioner Nick Fish from the City of Portland, PSU President Vim Vivelle, Greater Portland, Inc. Executive Director Janet Labar, and Metro Council President Tom Hughes. Also, Doug Stamm from the Meyer Memorial Trust. So it's a broad-based group of people who have influence in their respective sectors and also have a pretty good sense about what's happening in the region and are therefore able to help with the actual team establish priorities for the region. The cross-functional nature of the teams is terrific. I can say this. I was, I think I can safely say, with Senator Johnson, there at the beginning of what we now call community solutions. It had a noble but very informal start. And really the idea was to bring these cross-functional groups together, these agencies together, who were not always accustomed to being in the same place. place at the same time. And that has evolved into a more formal process, and it's become immensely effective. In our region, just to give you an idea of some of the projects, the North Hillsborough Industrial Area, which is incredibly important, actually out by the Hillsborough Airport, the Clackamas Development Agency Industrial Site for Clackamas, and the Troutdale Reynolds Industrial Park, which we own, the largest brownfield redevelopment in the state, used to be an aluminum plant and is now reliving and contributing to the tax base for Troutdale. We could not have redeveloped this site without the thorough and complete enthusiasm of this regional solutions team. And I might say about each of these teams, they all have day jobs. Right there, we didn't add employees to go do all of this, and so these are people who have to do this as a labor of love because it comes in addition to all of their other daily responsibilities, and I think it gives them an additional sense of commitment to the work that's going on. And for our group, which I am very familiar with, I can say they're just really outstanding. I've seen this program mature over time. I'm really excited about it. I think it's what we should all expect of government. It's so hard to do, and I think we have momentum now, and I just encourage you to fund this program. I think it's really making a big, big difference. Happy to answer any questions.
Questions? Thank you, sir.
Chair Gomberg, Co-Chair Johnson, members of the committee, Mike MacArthur. I'm Executive Director of the Association of Oregon Counties. I also moonlight as back home as the convener of the North Central Regional Community Solutions Advisory Committee, as does Senator Johnson in Northwest. So I thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of the OBDD budget and the Regional Solutions Program. First of all, I want to say I really want to applaud the leadership of Sean Robbins and his team in the Business Development Department and IFA. I think they're really doing a fine job of leading us in the economic development efforts of the state. In particular, I think they've taken a practical yet innovative approach to the problems that we have, and I really appreciate the way that they've taken into consideration all of the state of Oregon in their efforts. This Regional Solutions is a critical piece of that infrastructure. I think the regional programs have been around since, I think, 1843. If you think about it, when we had the provisional government, the first thing they did is create four districts. But then again, in 1968, Tom McCall issued an executive order creating 14 districts. And then Governor Goldschmidt created regional strategies. And then this has evolved, as Bill has said, into what we have now, which is, I think, the most effective way to do this regional work. Regional Solutions really, I think, is a way where we do a reality check between what locals want and what the state can do. Also, it's a reality check between what the state wants to do and what the locals can tolerate. So I think there's a place where we come together and meet local and state to work out what we see as local opportunities and what the state has as resources. I handed out to you some information about North Central. I thought it'd be nice for you to see it on paper, what we look like, how it works in our one of 11 regions. I think it's similar to the way it works in other regions. We have a regional coordinator, Kate Sinner, who does a fantastic job of being out on the ground, learning about what's going on in the region. We are centered at Columbia Gorge Community College, so we have that connection to an educational institution. We have the five state agencies that Bill mentioned, and you can see their names listed here. We have, from time to time, other state agencies come and meet with us. That's what we call the team. Those are the people that help solve the problems and move the projects along. That's the critical piece of this, to have that relationship with that team. And then you see the appointees. I'm the convener. We have Jeff Anderson of Oregon Community Foundation. These are governor's appointees. Scott Rayner, from business representative from Hood River. Then AOC's appointed Rod Runyon. LOC's is appointed mayor of the Dalles, Steve Lawrence. And then we have the committee appointees. The five governor's appointees, then sit down and say, who's missing here? And we go out and find the rest of the people in the community. So we have mayors from Wasco County, from Sherman County, isn't listed here. Sherman County judge, the community college president, Frank Toda, Ken Bailey from Orchard View Farms, agricultural representative, Commissioner Maui Myers on there as a businessman, and Andrea Kloss from the Port of the Dalles, so on. So we tried to make sure we have the whole community represented. If we have an issue where other folks need to come to the table, we make sure that they come. When we put the EGB expansion of the Dalles on the agenda, we get lots of friends from Portland come see us. So that's the way it works in North Central. So our group came together and said, what's the most overriding issue facing our counties? This is 2 years ago, and we said it was housing. It varies from county to county. Hood River is affordable housing. The Dalles is just supply of housing. In Sherman County, it's again supply and getting people to live there, frankly. So we worked on a project that met all the needs of all three counties, and it's just now begun. As you can see from this press release, Governor Brown announced this money has hit the ground in North Central, and we're going to start seeing what we can do with this revolving loan fund administered by the EDA agent, the Economic Development Administration's agent. So we didn't have to create any staff. It's already there with the EDA in this, and they're going to administer this program for us, and it's going to be exciting to see how that plays out. So I think this is an essential program for our infrastructure for economic development. I hope that you see fit to continue it. I think that it's going to continue to provide returns to the state of Oregon in the way of income tax, which you can then use to solve some of your other problems. So thank you for the opportunity. I'd be happy to answer questions.
Any questions? Yes, Senator.
I think it's testimony to Mr. Wyatt's commitment to this program that he came up all the way from Portland to testify for 10 minutes, and he's going to go back into the evening Portland traffic.
Which I'm sure will be our next subject of discussion with the regional strategy group.
Department of Transportation is up next week here.
Yeah, good, good.
Yeah. Anything else? Well, thank you so much for your insights and your contributions, and for sharing with us today.
Thank you. This last slide is actually the numbers, and Mr. Schessler might be able to explain it better than I can, but what it reflects is the request as well as at the time this was put together, the projected carryover from the bonds that were sold to support 2014 projects, but the agreements had not yet been signed. The agreements are almost all signed. They're currently under review by the Department of Justice, so we anticipate having this money out the door before the end of the biennium.
Very good. Mr. Schessler, are you finishing up? Do we turn to Mr. Robbins? Where do we go from here? Very good.
Chair Gomberg and members of the committee, paying particular attention to the clock being 4:30, I want to make good on my promise to wrap up on time. So we're going to make a few fly adjustments for tomorrow. We're going to extend part of Mr. Schessler's comments into tomorrow to finish up the infrastructure finance pieces. And I'll just put a bow on what you heard from the regional solutions folks as we exit today, which is that I think one of the most important parts of their work and the partnership that we have as an agency with them is that it extends the reach of our professionals. We have 135 people, as I mentioned yesterday, going to bat for the state of Oregon and the economic development efforts of the state. The Regional Solutions helps us extend that reach even further and, quite frankly, puts agencies at a table where we've talked about wanting to be a stronger advocate for the economy and business. It puts us right in there with our colleagues from some of the other agencies whose actions and work directly affect ours. So we have a deep commitment to making sure that they're successful and our folks in the field are successful. And it's a good way to actually end today as we go in tomorrow where Mr. Schessler will take us through the rest of IFA, the innovation and entrepreneurship strategy, and Arts, Cultural Trust, and Film Commission to wrap things up, I believe, going into Thursday.
Excellent. Any questions for Mr. Robbins? Well, thank you to you and your team for a great and very effective presentation today, and also for your strategic approach to finishing your presentation before we finish listening to it.
Thank you very much.
And with that, I will conclude the public hearing. And is there anything else before we adjourn? Then I'll conclude the hearing. Thank you.
Great.
Then I'll conclude the hearing. Thank you. Great.